Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and top leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau, your host, and we're going to have some real thoughtful conversation today with a woman who has so many personalities. She's multifaceted. We're talking here for this program with Giselle Ugarte.
You nailed it.
I got it.
I've been
practicing for a week. So I know you're famous, but I haven't heard of you before. So that's why, you know, you got to connect with everybody.
You know, I don't know if I would call myself famous, but it's crazy how many different platforms we have to connect with others nowadays.
Right.
And the internet has definitely helped contribute to that. And I am a big lover of social media as a way of connecting with people. You don't always hear people say that social media is how you connect with people. Usually they think that's how you, you know, block yourself out from the world, or screen time is getting you away from yourself. But I've found a way to really create deep, meaningful connections.
So that's our objective today.
Yeah.
We need to form a deep, meaningful connection.
Let's do it.
Because the great thing is all these connections out there, but then there are so many disconnections.
Mm-hmm.
It's seemingly more than ever because people get into these echo chambers, these silos, and
yeah.
I think that's part of our topic today. But boy, I think this first segment, we're just going to talk about the different things that you do.
Sure.
Now, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Wayzata, Minnesota.
Wayzata,
Minnesota.
Okay, I've been there.
You have. 55391. I mean, come on.
It's on my mental map.
Yeah. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from, actually born in Lake City.
Okay.
But lived around the country and then came here as a teenager.
And you came back.
I came back. And
you stayed here.
Doesn't that happen
You're
a lot?
You're still here.
I know. And then I left again and came back again for college years. So it's kind of the rubber band effect. And you went away and came back.
I did. I went away to California. I went to Los Angeles. I never in a million years imagined myself coming back, even though everyone says that you do.
Right.
And sure enough, after 9 years in LA, I had every intention of moving to New York. Somehow got pulled here for 2 weeks to take a vacation, and it turned into now almost 3 years.
Was it, oh, I missed the lakes, or was it
No.
You got a job, or was it, you know, your family, or what was the glue that held you here?
You know, it was an unexpected opportunity to have a big part of a morning show here that was being developed at Go Radio on 96.3. And the thought was, you know what, at the time I had been doing TV the whole time, and also digital as that was emerging. And radio was a new beast. I was used to telling other stories. I'd done journalism and entertainment news and talked all about celebrities and all the things happening. And all of a sudden I was forced to tell my own story and have my own opinions and perspectives and share that with two other people at the earliest time of day when I'm not a morning person. And I love new challenges. And that was something that I thought, okay, let's try this out for a couple weeks. And then it was like, okay, I'll try it out until the end of the year. And then it was like, okay, I think we're doing this. And it was not without a lot of challenges and kicking and screaming. And the first day that it hit 50 degrees was brutal for me because I had not had a Minnesota winter in 9 years.
Oh, it went down to 50, not up to 50.
No, it went down to 50. And then every day after that, I'm not kidding when I say I cried almost every single day for about 4 months.
But you grew up here.
It's different, though.
It went away.
It's different when you have all the activities of school and when you're living with a family and when you have that. But when you are by yourself, you know, I'm not married. I was single at the time, and I'm going home just to myself.
Oh.
And I didn't have any friends either. So, I started totally over.
So metaphorically, your life was cold.
It was so cold. It was freezing. But I told myself that if I'm going to stay here, I need to put 2 feet in. I think there was a part of me that always thought, okay, New York, Chicago. So I finally decided I'm going to jump in with both feet. And the following year, the moment that it hit 50 degrees, and this is going to sound really cheesy, but I highly recommend this for anyone who is braving the cold every year or wondering why you live here. Every day I woke up and I told myself I love the cold. Every time I was tempted to complain or whine about the ice or my coat or my boots or slipping or my car, you know, having to thaw that out or scrape it, I would change it and go, I love this. I love the cold. I love the snow. I love the ice. I love slipping into work. I love waking up before the sun even comes up. And weirdly enough, I kid you not, I now prefer the winter over summer.
You do?
The cold hits my face in the morning and I love it.
Well, and what time did you get up for your morning drive show?
I used to have to get up at like 3:30, 3:45 in the morning. And I would push it. I think by the end, I would be like, let's see if I can get away with 15 more minutes in bed. let's see how much more I can prepare at night. Because what's weird is that with that morning schedule, I don't know if you've ever had to wake up that
early. I've had every schedule.
Because you've had the overnight shift,
I've
right?
I've had overnights. I've had, you know, late, early. I've had morning drive.
You know, it's a totally different beast that you don't understand unless you're there. And what was weird for me is everyone's like, oh, you must be an early bird now. I'm like, no, my mind still turns on at 10 o'clock at night. I cannot for the life of me go to bed early. And so I would go to bed at like 10 or 11 at night and wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning constantly. And I didn't realize how tired I was until 2 years in. I ended up changing jobs and I had a week out where I was having a quote-unquote normal person schedule. And I remember waking up one day, and it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I go, I'm not tired. I could keep going. Let's do this. I'm like, is this what the world looks like? Is this morning traffic? You're real? What is this?
So you were able to adjust to the cold, but not to the time.
I was able to adjust to the cold, not to the time. But I always say I'm always a little tired, but I'm never stressed out. So I can do well without not a lot of sleep.
Wow. And so you, tell me about California. You went to USC.
I did.
That's a good school.
It's a great school.
No, don't tell me your parents paid $5 million so you could get in there.
They did not. They did not.
What?
I know. I got in the right way. I got to keep my degree. But it was my dream school. And I was never the top of my class. I always had really, really good grades, but I was not on the honor roll.
I bet because you had a lot of extracurricular activities.
That was the thing, though, is that, and that's what I try to say, too, because I wear a lot of different hats, and I do a lot of speaking gigs. And I always say, very rarely was I the first or the best in anything. You know, I was never the smartest person in the room. And I was not, you know, I was in AP classes and I did get good grades. Don't get me wrong. I definitely did not slack off, but I worked really hard to make sure that I was making connections with my teachers, getting those good recommendations. I was very well-rounded. I was involved in community service. I did all kinds of sports. I was involved in the arts. I had my hand in a lot of different things that made me stand out, even though I didn't have a perfect score on the SATs, or I never had a 4.0, ever.
What was your subject?
That I studied in school.
College.
It was communication and journalism.
So that's a practical degree.
Which is I think so. It's a practical degree, and I've used it
ways. It's not like you ever need to take math class.
I don't, but what's crazy is, and this is always the surprise that people hear, is that I did get a 36 in the ACT in the math section.
That's good.
And I got a perfect score on the SAT in the math section there as well.
Wow.
And as soon as that happened, I stopped taking math in high school, and I never took another math class again. So people are like, but you're good at math. I'm like, no, not anymore. But I think it's important to be well-rounded no matter what it is that you're doing, learn a little bit about whatever it is that you're pursuing. And that was always something that I stayed true in college and throughout.
Well, we have a commonality. I never took math in college either.
Yeah.
So
there you go. How'd that work out for you?
Loved it. Of course, I got into
any regrets?
Well, no, I have no regrets. I mean, I had enough in high school to qualify for college. And then I studied philosophy. So there you had to take logic, which is same thing, only just no numbers.
Yeah,
so
I do.
Totally abstract.
It's interesting how you can use a lot of those things in any field that you're going into. I do wish that I would have had more of a business emphasis in college.
Mm.
That is something that I do feel like I'm lacking because I have all the ideas and I'm this creative and I want to do all the things, but I need some of those rationales to make sure that I'm staying in check and not going too over my head, especially when it comes to running a business.
Do you know Stevie Ray from the
comedy? I love Stevie Ray.
So actually, I was in his first ensemble years ago.
I love him so much.
But he created his own degree up at Morehead State University in comedy and business. So mm-hmm. he already had in his mind, he planned his future. And so he had the business side. Now I think he's doing very well in business and still making people laugh.
Stevie Ray, I would actually say, is a big part in who I am today.
Really?
So when I was in high school, I did pageants. I did Miss Teen Minnesota. And Stevie was actually on in a small group of people who helped me train for interviews.
Really?
So he would come in, and he wasn't a coach per se for me, but he would come in and be a part of like this mock judge, you know, panel, and he would ask me the hard questions. But he would coach me, even though he wasn't like technically there for that. But he gave me some of the best advice and asked me some of the most challenging questions, to where to this day I say the hardest interview that I have ever had, they were all my pageant interviews. They weren't job interviews or college interviews. All of that was a walk in the park because of what I learned in those sessions with him. And just the way that I think he did make it acceptable for me to take paths that were not traditional or normal. He was able to create a business from something creative that previously people would have been like, oh, that's dumb. Like, you're wasting your time. Why would you do that? You're never going to make any money doing that.
Well, that's the whole idea of improvisation, is that you do stuff that hasn't been set out in stone yet. You make it up yourself as you go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he's so good at that. And he has a way with words that I always admired, because when he was giving me feedback, it was never in a way that I had done something terribly wrong or that I wasn't good enough. It was using what I had given and then finding a way to make it better.
Because that's part of the rules of improv, is you never say no. You don't put people down, because that stops the energy. the skit ends right there.
He's so good. I love that. If he's listening, I love you, Stevie. He's amazing.
Okay.
Throw him a kiss. Mwah. He's great. I love him.
Wow. So you went out to USC.
Mm-hmm.
And studied journalism. And then did you get like an internship where you're doing it while you were still in school?
I did. So the first 2 years of school, I was on the song leading team, which is basically dancers with pom-poms. So we're on the sidelines and we're dancing, but we're dancing to all the marching band music, and the marching band at USC is huge.
It is incredible.
There is nothing like game day at USC. I had that total, when you think of ultimate college experience, that was mine. And we went to the Rose Bowl the year that I was on the team. We went to Brazil the year that I was on the team.
The big show.
Yeah, it was so amazing. And then after I was no longer dancing, I mean, I had been dancing my whole entire life. All of a sudden it was like, what am I supposed to do? Like, what am I good at besides this? I don't know what to do. And luckily I had met someone, because we had done so many TV appearances as the cheerleaders, where I got an internship and kind of a small part-time job where I got to put together packages of sports and entertainment. And very lucky, my sophomore year, I had my national television debut with ESPNU.
Wow.
As they were coming around. And I also had reached out to someone who had graduated from USC, who I knew was working at E! News, and I got an internship there. Was working in the news bureau for Ken Baker and was picking up on things very quickly. I feel like I was this superstar intern that would just kind of ask, you know, what was it, you can ask permission later or like apologize later.
Oh, sure. Do it
now. And I would just go for things unless they told me not to. And so I found myself, you know, even in college, covering Michael Jackson's death and going to the doctor's office and going to the driveway and trying to get information and typing up stories for the website, and not just getting coffee was expected.
I know. We had interns. All they did was get coffee.
Yeah.
And I remember one was fired because it was early morning drive. His car wouldn't start because it was only like 25 below.
Mm-hmm.
And his job was to get cigarettes for the host, you know?
Yeah.
And he fell through and it got fired. So, but it doesn't get that cold in Los Angeles.
It does not get that cold. And I was always more than happy to get coffee. I would offer probably an obnoxious amount of like, can I get you anything? Do you want anything? Just so I would have an excuse to just listen and absorb everything that I could from every department. Because at that point, I mean, that was at the time, my dream was to work on E! News. I wanted to be on the air. I wanted to do entertainment news and be on the red carpet and meet all the celebrities. And it was still so shiny and lustrous and glittery. And so that's I just tried to stay there for as long as I could. And I'll never forget again getting an email from whoever was in charge of HR. And she was like, your internship was supposed to be over 3 months ago. I'm like, what do you mean?
Well, see, there you just did it. You didn't follow the rules, and you got more out of it.
And I got more out of it. And that was the same thing, too, where that summer I came home to Minneapolis. That was, I think, the only summer I came home. And I had I put it in air quotations, but I had an internship for the Tony Fly Morning Show at B96 at the time. And it really wasn't – I never filled out paperwork. I never applied.
Just walked in.
It was really just someone who said, hey, Tony's cool if you come in one morning. And I did, and then I came back the next day, and I came back the next day, and no one told me to go home. And so I started learning how to use the equipment, and I would just be the fly on the wall, where with that one, it was not as involved, and it was more so me getting water for the staff or going to lunch afterwards. But I say to this day, I would pay for that experience to go back and learn from Tony Fly and that incredible dream team of a morning show where, some people complain of like, oh, you should be paying interns and you should be doing, you should be giving them all these benefits. And like, that's cool and sure, but what I got out of my internships, it was an education to me where I felt like I was getting so much out of it that I wish I could bottle it up and I wish I could have videotaped the whole thing and gone back and taken notes and do it. I would do it again.
Well,
even
now. Like, it sounds like it's engraved in your brain.
It is. Don't you have those moments where they just stick out in you and you realize, oh, that little nugget, even if it was just one awesome piece of advice from a total stranger or from a boss who you admired, or maybe it was a total letdown, but that moment made you decide, okay, I'm going to do my life like this now. Or I'm not, I vow never to be like that person who is awful as this.
So a moment of realization. Now, did you decide to major in journalism because of these experiences, or was it the other way around?
In high school, my parents were very encouraging of me leaving the state. They really wanted me to step outside of the bubble that was Minnesota, especially since my parents are from Mexico and Texas, and there aren't a lot of people who look like us in Minneapolis. Especially Wayzata. So they really wanted me to see what the rest of the world was like. And so I picked two schools on opposite coasts, and it was between USC or Johns Hopkins.
Wow.
And even though math was not my favorite, I was good at it, and I loved science. So had I chosen Johns Hopkins, I probably would have gone that route.
Whereas, they have a great medical
school. Which is amazing. Exactly. With USC, it was, they had one of the top five journalism schools in the country.
Right.
So that's where it came into play, was me just seeing, okay, of the two top programs in very different fields, which ones can I get into? And I was able to get into both. And ultimately that, I think, USC, it had a lot more than just the educational program. It had the Greek system. I got into a sorority. It had the dance program like I was talking to you about, or the cheerleading and the awesome football team. And the network of Los Angeles, I felt, would be a little more powerful than Johns Hopkins in the smaller town where that is in Baltimore.
Right. One piece of advice, when my daughter was going to college looking for places to go, a person gave me some very good advice. They said, pick a college that has good internship possibilities in the surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's L.A.
Yeah, and proud alumni. Absolutely, when you're living in L.A., no one cares here in Minneapolis. But when you tell someone I'm a Trojan, or when you see that someone has a USC decal on their car, it's sort of this validation of, like, I'm a good person, even though maybe they're awful. But it does make you feel this community. There's definitely this interweb of things.
It's a special club.
It is. It's a special club. And it absolutely helps when you're trying to reach out and get that career advice or figure out that job or that internship. And so many of the professors were both instructors, but also professionals with jobs and networks that were still active. And to have that, I mean, one of my favorite classes, it met once a week, and it was maybe from 6 to 9 in the afternoon, or 6 to 9 in the evening. And it would be the same class every week. It would be my professor, Mary Murphy, who was an entertainment journalist, and she would have a different professional come in every week, and the first question was always, what was your first job? And the remainder of the class would be following that path of how did that person get from this first job that perhaps was in completely different or with no experience to all of a sudden they're running a giant production company or they are the host of the number one rated reality television show. Chris Harrison, the host of The Bachelor, was someone who came in every season. And that was a fun part about LA is that you could have these people immediately, you know, right down the street. Hey, you want to come pop by my class tonight?
They're all there. Well, we're talking with Giselle Ugarte on the program this week. And she's a motivational speaker. And right now I'm motivated to take a little break and catch my breath because you inspire confidence. I feel so confident
Let's
now.
Let's do it. Let's go take on the world,
we'll go
Steve.
Back. So we'll be back right after this. Yay.
Hey.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back on Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau here with Giselle Ugarte, who does so many things. I ran out of paper writing down her different skills and accomplishments and roles, her different persona. And let's see, I'll try to go through the list here. You're the director of marketing for MediaBridge Advertising.
I am.
Now, did you study advertising?
I didn't, but...
You are now.
I was going to say, I didn't study it formally in school, but what I didn't realize was throughout the entire course of my life and every network I've worked on, every person I've interviewed, every single platform that I have shared stories on, ultimately, it's all a piece of marketing, especially now in the digital age.
Right.
And so with that... MediaBridge saw that my hands-on experience was more valuable than, say, something that's written in my diploma or the fact that I've worked in an agency, but I've worked on every other element of that, perhaps more so.
What does a marketer do at an advertising agency?
Oh, my gosh.
These days.
Don't I do?
Well, it used to be, you know, just TV and print ads and radio. Now it's like this digital thing is just infinite. I mean, do more ads go on Instagram than TV these days or what?
For the very first time, we did see a shift in the industry as a whole where the digital dollars did exceed the traditional marketing dollars.
When was that happen?
This year.
This year?
This year. We saw that shift, but our agency is rooted in traditional. We are rooted in radio. And with that, we still see the value in it because we are handpicking every single buy. We know every market extremely well, whereas there are other agencies who the reason why they think it's not working is because they're like, okay, we'll just put this much money over there and this much money over there. And we're going, no. We want to put this much on the weekend, this much in the morning, this one, you know, this one with Bobby Bones, this one with Dave Ryan. We're very particular. And that's also what we're doing with everything that we're calling new media. So rather than calling it digital, we have decided that everything is kind of digital nowadays.
That's right. They digitized radio.
Even radio is digital. This podcast is digital.
My hand is digital.
Your hand could be digital. And so with that, it's constantly evolving. It's constantly new. There are multi-platforms in every single approach. And so we've coined it new media. And as the marketing director, it is different every single day, and it is so exciting that our CEO, Tracy Call, has given us the freedom to explore what are people engaging with. And it's not always what you would think. It's not always the most popular thing. So one thing we're looking into is podcasting. That's our biggest baby of a present right now.
It's a big deal, and people think it's so mysterious. It's basically recording your radio show.
It is talk radio, really. It really is talk radio. But we're looking at the ways that we are integrating our clients or even giving our clients a platform to use, so giving them their own podcast. We're looking at online courses. We're looking at paid ads, which is a space that some people are trying to take under their own hands because Facebook and Instagram have given you the tools to do it at home. But unfortunately, they don't realize there's a lot of strategy behind it. And that's why we have people pay us to do it so that you can target who you want to target. And that's a cool but very creepy thing nowadays that you can target people very specifically. And it's not just about choosing a station or a channel. It's choosing a demographic.
The big data gets sliced up, and Let's see. We want some left-handed redheads who have come from the East Coast to the West Coast. Could you know, find them for us?
You can. You know, and people are consuming in so many different ways. And to a lot of people, this is overwhelming. For me, it's really exciting because I see it as opportunities to connect. I see it as opportunities for small businesses to participate and be part of the conversation with big ones, where it used to be that the only way you could get exposure is if you had enough money to pay for a prime real estate billboard or the, you know, the Super Bowl or like some really big popular watched program. But now anybody has the power to go viral. Anybody has the power to use the internet, to hop into Instagram, to use Facebook, to use Twitter. And with that, there are so many resources available. And so we see potential for our clients on whatever budget it is that they're working with.
Right. You could be competing with a cat.
Yeah, I know. And those cats do really well.
I know.
Cats do really well.
So we got some cats just to compete with them.
You know,
we don't just to get them inspired. They're still kittens now, but
cats do really well.
Get there and target the audience. That used to be kind of simple too, but now it's a moving target. They keep changing. There's all kinds of stuff, and there's a demographic change. And I think that's one thing that you had to deal with recently is that, or that it's been in the news, is that especially the world is the United States is becoming increasingly multicultural.
Yes,
but the people that buy ads are not.
You know, it's so interesting to me how, you know, part of I think what MediaBridge did right is they brought in someone who they are seeing the world as it is. There are a lot of people who are still like stuck in, for whatever reason, ways that in their world are perhaps like politically correct or safe. And now one of the things that we are introducing to our clients is like, hey, you know, if we're going to think of a family that we're targeting, it doesn't have to be all white and they don't have to be straight. In fact, maybe it's a single parent home. Maybe it's a gay couple. Maybe it is they have an adopted child. Maybe their kids are different colors. And I think for me, my mom was born in Mexico. I say my dad's Tex-Mex because he was born in Texas. But if you think about it, the border crossed them. They didn't cross the border.
Well, that's right. I mean, there used to be no border.
Yeah, that didn't used to be a thing. And I almost feel weird sometimes calling myself Mexican-American because for me, I'm like, I was born here. I'm fully American. I was never in Mexico. I didn't go through crossing the border. If anything, I almost feel like I don't deserve that title. But also, I feel like sometimes the title of American is negated because of what I look like. And
has anyone ever told you to go back to your country?
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah, I get.
And you're indigenous.
But I get both of them though, because I've gotten that I'm not white enough, and I've gotten that I'm not brown enough. I've gotten
really?
That when people refer to, you know, anything in terms of money, well, you grew up white. Like, no, I didn't grow up white. I grew up as a product of these circumstances where my dad worked really hard and this country did give him an opportunity. And he went to medical school in Mexico. My brothers have dual citizenship. And so I appreciate that at MediaBridge with our clients and then also with the clients who I worked with prior to MediaBridge, that I'm able to help them see landscape a little differently. I will never forget because I pursued being in front of the camera before I started to work in marketing. And I walked into an audition room when I was kind of still starting out, and a casting director goes, it's just that you look like this. And he made this hourglass shape with his hands. And you know, your face is like this. And, you know, anything less flamboyant than Sofia Vergara these days is kind of underwhelming. I'm like, okay. So I didn't know that every white person has to have the exact same personality. But apparently, if you look like me, you have to have an accent, you have to be loud, and you have to be flamboyant. And those are three things that are absolutely not me. I was born here. I do know Spanish, but I definitely know English better. I speak very well and I work really hard. So it still amazes me that people think that we all look the same. We all have dark brown skin and dark brown hair and coarse hair. We all vote the same. We all come from, it's just, we're overthinking, I think, perhaps these stereotypes when we can just look out our window and see something totally different. And I'm excited to now be in the position of creating this content and educating our clients and talking about, you know, things as they are, and really almost that like do less mentality of just let it happen. Don't put someone in your ad who is diverse just to do it or to cause shock value or to get people talking about race. Let's try to do it.
Because that can be done wrong too.
Right.
What was the one where there was a Black Lives Matter protest and a woman gives a soft drink to everybody? And
Pepsi commercial. I mean,
Pepsi? That backfired.
I almost wonder if they did that to her on purpose. Honestly, I do. There are times, whether it is marketing or whether it is a personality on social media or a politician, where sometimes I really think there should be enough people in that room to know that it's a bad idea. You know, like there had to have been at least someone. And I kind of wonder if they did that on purpose.
But you can't do that to a client like Pepsi.
But did Pepsi know? I don't know. I mean, but can you? Because Pepsi, I mean, Pepsi, if anything, like Pepsi is the client who can afford to do that because they have such a heritage name brand. Like the person who ended up being at fault for that was Kendall Jenner, not Pepsi. Like everyone put the blame on her.
Because she is the one you saw.
Right. And she was the white person in the commercial. So, but I will say when people get really stirred up about these things, I appreciate it because I think otherwise they would have just let the world keep turning.
Hmm.
And yes, I do think some people are fragile and I do think that they make a big fuss of nothing. There's that too.
What, the fragility? Do you mean white fragility?
I think it's on every end of the spectrum, whether we want to admit it or not. I think that there are people who are fragile on every end and or who use – who sometimes even use their positions as an excuse. And in some cases, it's valid. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely still think that racism exists, and I experience it. I have had people who have dated me who there was one instance where he goes, I met his grandparents. He goes, I'm really surprised they liked you. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, I thought the race thing was going to be an issue. Like, it is 20. At the time, it was 2017. I'm like, really? Or hearing things, you know, where one of my Black girlfriends, she hates it whenever she sees her brothers with a white girl.
Mm.
She hates it. Or hearing, I've absolutely heard guy friends who they don't want to date a girl after they've dated someone who's Black. When really, like, that's your own insecurity. That's your own inferiority. But yet you claim that you're not racist because you have Black friends. Really, you're going to pull that?
Well, the organization that I operate, Synapse Minnesota, that's one of the things that we attack is the friendship gap.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an analysis of the social composition or the racial composition of social networks. They found that nationwide, 75% of whites only know other whites. They only socialize and have friends that are white. In the Midwest, that goes up to 82%.
Yeah.
So among Blacks, it's 65%, and then for Hispanics, it's lower. And basically, people don't know each other.
Yeah.
Therefore, all they have is the stereotypes.
That's all they have, and that's why I always want to give people the benefit of the doubt, and that's why I want to use my platform for visibility, where I'm sharing my story, not because I'm high on myself and in love with myself, which, trust me, I am.
you're confident.
But it's also that I didn't have that person to look up to when I was younger. And so when I went and moved out to Los Angeles, because my parents wanted me to step outside of myself, knowing how little diversity there was, and me being the only person, the only friend who looked like me and sounded like me, I went out to California and all of a sudden it was the opposite where I was like, maybe I'm supposed to be more Mexican. Maybe. And this is funny because we were talking about my last name off the air, Ugarte.
Ugarte, yeah.
Everybody wants to say Ugarte or Ugarte. And it has always, my whole life, been the Tex-Mex version, Ugarte. But when I went to L.A., all of a sudden I start seeing more Mexicans and more Chicanos and more people who look like me. And I'm like, oh, like, I'm the white girl now. I don't want to be the white girl. No, my last name is Ugarte. And I still have, you can find videos on YouTube where I'm introducing a show and I'm like, hey, guys, I'm Giselle Ugarte. Good to see you. And it was this whole other identity crisis, because then I'm thinking, okay, but wait a minute. Now I need to be, I felt like I was Selena, where she's, you know, she's trying to like Oprah and Christina, and she's trying to speak just as good of English as it is Spanish. And what I ultimately realized after a long identity crisis is I need, as silly as it is, I need to be as true to myself as I am and have been, because this is what the modern American looks like. And I do feel like it is my purpose to show what that is, to show that, yes, I do have a nephew who has light blonde hair and blue eyes, because our great grandmother did have blue eyes, you know, to show that I do have cousins who have red hair and green eyes, to show that, you know, that it is just here in America where we categorize people as something other than American. You know, you don't hear African Canadian or Mexican Canadian unless someone actually physically came from Mexico and then moved to Canada. That's not how they describe race there. And that you should be proud of whatever your race is and whatever you do look like and whatever that story looks like, because I think it's time for us to stop targeting just according to race rather than actual interests and circumstances and what families look like now, because it's so different. And how awesome is that? You know, how awesome is it that our kids are now being exposed to this as normal and they don't even see the glass ceiling? You ask a girl who is 5 or 6 years old if she wants to be president of the United States, and if she does, without question, she sees it as a possibility. Like, she doesn't have anybody who's pulling her back in any way unless you give her that glass ceiling that's going to limit her. And that's awesome. And I think we just need to see more of that, because it was times when I saw women who looked like me or other stories that resounded with me that I felt more comfortable in myself. And that wasn't necessarily coming from someone who was famous. It could have even been a close family friend who let me know it was okay to be or talk or act a certain way. And more of that, please, whether it is people with disabilities, people who aren't super duper skinny and don't have the six pack, people who are brown, people who are black, people who have accents, all of that, we need to create spaces and environments to let everybody know. And that was a huge thing with our client for the NCAA is, you know, come ready to play. Everyone is invited. Families, regardless of what that looks like for you, whether you're a single mom, whether your kids are adopted, whether, you know, it doesn't matter. And I think we need to see more of that and follow the examples of our kids, of that inclusivity, that everyone is welcome and they won't be afraid of it unless you put those barriers on them.
So you're kind of a teacher for clients.
I am.
You've lived it. You understand the complexities of the current world.
Every agency should be that for clients. Every agency should be transparent. And we try to be extremely transparent with ours, because we want them to know where their dollars are going. We're not going to take advantage of you just because you have a big budget. We are going to tell you exactly what we're doing with every single dollar, whether it is in traditional or new media. And if you give us the chance to do so, we want to create awesome content for you, whether it is a new logo design or your next Super Bowl commercial. And we want to show you what that looks like through the eyes of an actual consumer. We're not just looking at your customer as, you know, someone 18 to 60 men and women who have this much money. We're really targeting in and helping tell the story of your audience and also the story of your brand.
Do you ever have clients say, well, I don't want to use a black guy because my audience wouldn't like that. My customers, they don't like that.
I think every client thinks they know who their audience is, and it's ultimately up to us to tell them. And I would say, too, that we had a potential client come in recently who we had looked at all of their data. And I go, did you know that you guys actually kind of have this lesbian cult following? And they're like, what? I'm like, lesbian couples really love you guys. And they're like, really? Like, yeah, I mean, whether or not you work with us, I think you should take this, because lesbians really like your cooking classes. Like, you should, they could be a great target for you.
So you help reveal the audience.
We help reveal the audience. And we also, Twin Cities Pride is one of our clients too. So we try to have clients who are diverse as well. We also have diverse opinions in our office. We have a female owned and female run agency. So our CEO is female. The majority of our leadership team is female. But we absolutely have men in the office. we have all sexual orientations and, you know, people from all walks of life. And ultimately, that makes us better marketers because when we're in a room putting together a pitch, we have someone who can say, I don't know, is that right?
The gut ethic,
which also leads me to believe there's no way these brands who released these controversial commercials didn't know that there was a chance that someone wasn't going to like it. And that's the thing, too. Not everyone has to like it. Not everyone needs to. And if anything, I think the key isn't necessarily to get people to like it. It's to make them feel something and to feel a connection towards you. And that's what we want. We want people to not just marry into the product because you can't do that anymore, especially with the internet. They have to marry into what you're selling and want to be lifers in what it is.
The we in this case is Media Bridge Advertising, where our guest today, Giselle Ugarte, is the director of marketing. And there's a lot more. We didn't get to all of your other roles. We'll have to take a break. Take a break and come back to see the
Do you
the
want
wider,
me back?
Well, for the next segment, yeah, okay. at least. So we'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
Back again with Synapse Think Tank of the Air, the final segment, although we could go for hours.
If you want to.
I think. Well,
I think you got to be someplace.
I think we might get kicked out of the studio here. We're talking with Giselle Ugarte.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. And, well, you're familiar with the microphone. I mean,
it's
you've done that. Director of Marketing at Market Bridge Advertising.
Media Bridge Advertising.
Media Bridge Advertising, sorry. And then you're a motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. Well, like I feel motivated too. But do you have like a standard speech that you vary or do you make it up every day or how do you do that?
I never want to be the speaker who has the canned speech every single time. I think it's great when people do that and when they prepare and when they have these beautifully curated presentations of slides and graphics. But that's just not me. For me, I definitely do have a theme that I somewhat stick with, which was ultimately confidence building and getting rid of the excuses in your life. But I want to tailor every message to my audience.
Well, excuses in your life. Everybody does that. Well, if it wasn't for that thing in high school, I would have been. I could have been a contender.
Yeah, it's true. But I find that when you start knocking out those excuses that are in the big of really big dreams of goals, it's easier to knock them out for other things, or to learn how to tackle them when those excuses come in the form of other monsters or Instagram handles or people who come in and out of your life as you're going through what you're going through. Because we're always going to have insecurities. Even though we think that they've gone away as we age, as our bodies change, as the people in our lives change, as things happen that are unexpected, and knowing how to cope, I think that's really important, knowing how to cope, knowing that it's not always going to be easy, and knowing how to prepare yourself every time those things get hard in the cycles and seasons of life is really helpful. And also knowing that you're not alone, that other people are going through it too, and that no one is perfect. Everyone is fighting their own battle. Maybe just not right now or especially right now, and that you are who you are, not in spite of the things that you've gone through, but because of.
Now, are you one of those people, like, you'll see people talking about drug addiction, and they've been, like, former addicts. Now, did you ever have a period where you were insecure and you overcame it to build your own confidence, or were you confidence out of the crib?
All the time. I believe that confidence isn't the absence of insecurity. It's the embracement of it.
Really? Embrace your insecurities?
Embracing your insecurities. So knowing that, okay, it might not be perfect, but you're not going to die. Like, you can get through it. You can do it. And even if you don't think that you're totally qualified, that doesn't mean that you're not capable. And ultimately, too, I think understanding the difference between identity and purpose. I think a lot of people mix those things together.
What's the difference?
So identity is, say, a title or a role or something that you step into, whether it is a weight on a scale or a job title or being on a team of sorts, being associated with a brand.
Being an alumni at a certain college,
being a parent. Mm. I find this a lot, especially when talking to women, is a lot of people think their purpose in life is to be a mom. Mm. And for a long time, I thought that was supposed to be my purpose. That as a woman, I think that was projected onto me, that my purpose in life is to reproduce and get married. And when you think about it, like, that's kind of sad because that would mean that you would have no purpose until you become a mom. And then what happens if you can't have kids? Or what happens if adoption's really hard? Or what happens if something happens to your child, God forbid? Or what happens when they go off to college? Then do you no longer have a purpose anymore? How does that work? And so the difference is with identity, it's a role that you take on. And yes, perhaps you were destined for that role. You were destined to be your daughter's father, and you were destined to be your wife's husband. However, that's not your purpose in life. Your purpose is bigger than that. When you think about, well, if say you are that person who you believe that your purpose is to be a mom, well, what is it about being a mom that fulfills you? And what are other things in your life that give you that same feeling? So maybe it's not actually being a mom, but maybe it's that you love grooming leaders. Maybe it's that you love making people feel better about themselves, or that you just love nurturing. You love taking care of people in some or specific capacity. So
you follow your bliss and find out what it is.
You follow what it is, and you try to sprinkle it into every single thing that you do. So for me, I believe that my purpose is to help people find confidence in telling their stories. And if you think about it, I have been able to do that in every single aspect of my career, and I also do it on a personal level as I give advice to my friends. So whether it's me as a motivational speaker, me as a journalist, me as a marketer, I'm helping people find confidence in their stories every day.
Or confidence in their products.
Or confidence in their products. But their products have stories too. And it's learning how to tell that story. And it's something that I didn't realize that that was my purpose probably until recently. But when I do think back to when I was very young, the first time I ever felt a calling greater than myself was my mom brought me with her to a Special Olympics gymnastics practice orientation. I think I was about 10 or 11 years old at the time. And with that, I couldn't quite be a coach or a volunteer, but I was still there, so they were going to let me help. So they thought the safest thing to do was to assign me to this little boy named Christopher, who was both deaf and blind, and he had Down syndrome. And most of the time at practice, he would just sit and look at a corner and rock back and forth. So they thought, okay, smart thing, let's just give her him because he's not going to do anything. You know, he just kind of sits around.
Give it to Giselle.
Yeah, just give it to Giselle. And somehow I, weirdly enough, I was not uncomfortable. I just felt like this drawing to him, like I was just drawn to him. And within the hour, we ended up being able to communicate with each other without words. We ended up being able to go around the gym and do different activities and jump on the trampoline. And I got him to laugh and I got him to smile and I got him to be taken more seriously than previously he had before, because people just couldn't quite figure out how to get to him, which can be really difficult. They weren't doing anything wrong by any means. But I found that I had a gift to be able to communicate with someone. And in that case, it was with someone who people thought was incapable of communicating.
And you were 10.
And I was 10. And I always had just this glow about that moment. And I have been working with special needs people every year since then. But it's been something that I didn't realize was actually a part of every other thing that sets my soul on fire and that gets me excited to go to work. And out of college, wanting to do entertainment, not typical, did not do the 9-to-5 thing. So I took every single job that I could, and I found myself feeling fulfilled in more than just one type of job. And people would always say, well, which one's your favorite? Like, I don't know. I like all of them. And now I know it's because that's what I was doing in some way, shape, or form.
I have a question for you. You know, I'm a word guy. I've done all the media
stuff.
I love words. But it's so big now to talk about story and narrative. And sometimes I think those words get overused.
Yeah.
Now, what do you mean by story and narrative? I don't know if you use the word narrative, but.
Yeah, I didn't, but that's okay. You know, ultimately it's different in each box. With me, I love figuring out why people are the way that they are. What makes them tick? What happened in their childhood, in their careers, in their marriages to make them who they are? So a lot of times people look at their past and it's something that they're ashamed of or afraid of. And I want to help people go to that place and realize that they're not the only person who has gone through whatever that is, whether it is a triumph or something that is devastatingly horrific and traumatic. And I want them to in their own way, because I'm not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, I can't help that. I can't help them get out of it, mm-hmm. but I do want them to see that what everything that they've gone to until this point has made them who they are, and that that is unique and it is worth sharing. No matter what that is, they don't have to be a celebrity, they don't have to be famous, but like I said, with me, I didn't have a lot of people who looked like me and who sounded like me where I grew up. Now we have the internet, and I can be exposed to so many people who I can find inspiration from. And every story, whether someone is talking about becoming a New York Times bestseller or simply learning how to introduce themselves to strangers at a party. Like every single lesson, you can find somebody who has a unique story that you can relate to. Or maybe it's taking your anti-anxiety medication, or maybe it was how you came out to your parents. But all of those stories and all of those challenges, people can relate to in some way. And it just takes that right person who you can identify with to let you know you're okay and the world needs you and the world needs your stories and it's going to be fine.
Hmm.
So that's what I love, is just the connection and the pride in where they came from. And I've very recently, for example, I worked with someone who she is a loan officer. And one of her greatest victories and one of the things that makes her unique is the house or the commercial building that her mother used to clean to be able to afford to pay for her and her brothers, she now owns. And she used to be so ashamed. And in fact, it wasn't until that moment that she talked about her mom being, you know, someone who cleaned buildings and offices. She was so ashamed of that. She was so ashamed of the brokenness where she came from, of this single mother, broken family home. And by the end, I'm going, are you kidding me? Like, you came from that and you are now this. Do you know how many people, especially Mexicans, she's Mexican, could hear that and relate and understand and see hope in that story? And it doesn't matter that you're not Jennifer Lopez or that you are this actress. You have this beautiful, unique story, and now you have, you know, this husband and these kids and this successful business, and you're at the top of your field, and you didn't come from anything, but you still did it. Every excuse that people make about how you can't rise from this, like, you did it. That is opportunity. And I want more people to feel comfortable in sharing not just the high moments, but all of the in-betweens that ultimately made you who you are. You know, she is the person who she is because she came from that.
So your idea of a story is kind of to plot out historically their growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then to change their attitude, to not be ashamed, to look at it and see, well, that's what got me where I am. Yeah. Without these things, I wouldn't be here.
That should be on your resume, you know?
And that's a good for the people that do have the canned speeches, and then they can use that.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
And put that in there.
Yeah.
Well, also, kind of when I think of purpose, I think of, for human beings, is that we all have a certain potential,
mm-hmm.
and unfolding that potential. Is that part of what you see as well?
I do. I want people to charge up their maximum potential, but I want them to feel present in it, because I think that there are a lot of motivational speakers who go like, oh, you're made for so much more, or you're supposed to be so much better, or you're supposed to make like $1 million, and you're supposed to have like the biggest house ever, and like, go for it. You can do it now. And that's great. If that's what you want, like if you want $1 million, that's great. But I want you to always look to improve yourself without looking at your current circumstances as less than.
Mm.
Because your current circumstances are still part of your journey, just like your history is. It's still a plot on the point, or the point on the plot of your journey. And if you are living a simple life in a small town at a 9-to-5 job and you're happy with that, awesome. Because I don't want people to feel less than when people talk about how they don't want to do the 9-to-5er anymore. They want to, you know, pick their own schedule. And like I said, they want to have the millions of dollars and the huge business and the eh. But if you're doing what you're doing and you're a mom working at home and you're happy, awesome. But if you're doing that and you're doing it because you're afraid of what you actually want to be doing, or you're doing it and you're waking up miserable every single day and then passing that on to your kids, then let's talk. and let's figure out where it was in your journey that you decided that you were no longer good enough for your dream. And let's figure out how we can make it a possibility using what you currently have and not feeling like, well, now that I have kids, I can't do this anymore. Or now that I'm a mom, I'm too old for this. If you really want to do it, let's do it.
And you also have the opposite. People with big homes and $1 million, and they're not happy.
At all.
It's all about attitude.
At all. And back to that identity purpose thing, a lot of people look for identity in
their
money.
Their bank account.
In the zeros in their bank account or in the size of their house or the neighborhood where they live in. And then all of a sudden something happens and you lose all your money and they become depressed and they don't feel like they have a purpose, or something unexpected happens and they don't know how to handle all of a sudden having to go in a different direction, or they get laid off and they are extremely down on themselves because they only knew themselves as that executive or that salesperson or being a part of that team.
And they don't know how to imbue a sense of purpose in their kids. I understand one of the biggest problems with these big wealthy families is the kids have no direction. They get into drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even the one thing that I talk about too is being more comfortable talking about when you need help. Because mental illness is a thing as well. And that's another reason why people turn to drugs, is that, yes, you can look for that identity and that validation in drugs and alcohol, and that might give you a little burst of confidence every now and then. But also, what is considered normal for you? One of my best friends is an advocate in talking about postpartum depression, which previously was not something that we talked about.
Right.
And again, one of the ways that we can use the internet, and that we have encouraged clients to use the internet, of talking about some of the challenges as mothers, as fathers, as women, as providers, as parents, which I'm not a parent, but my mom, I know, is so jealous of the YouTube community of, like, if you have a parent question, you can just Google it. you didn't have
people to help you
with your daughter.
So, Giselle, we just have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to ask you, you have a clothing line that kind of is aligned with your motivational speaking. What is that?
It is.
I am confident. T-shirts or something?
Yeah, kind of. So two things that I talk about a lot is my company's called Made for This. Made for This life, again, the life that you're in now. And it's all about growing into your true authentic self. So we have our MFTL clothing that gives back to different causes that do inspire confidence throughout. And it will be an online course eventually. And then also NMX, which is No More Excuses. So it's when you're ready to be that unapologetic version of yourself, and when you're ready to be the most kick-assingest version of that.
Kicking ass.
Yeah. Kick-assing his version of that. It's clothing that is inspirational and also on with the brand.
Does it have words on it?
It has words on it. Okay. So Made for This Life, NMX, No More Excuses.
But if you're really confident, you'll do a tattoo of it.
If you want to do a tattoo of it, like, send it to me. Maybe we'll get one together. That would be so much fun. And Made for This Body is another one that will be coming out soon. And I want it to be geared towards people who they want to be active and they're perhaps afraid of this idea that you have to have this perfect six pack. You don't need a perfect six pack to rock the outfit. And also,
I think I have a 12 pack.
There, I mean, a beer in the fridge.
No.
No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke that I always use. But okay. But also, clothing is adaptive too, since I work with so many people who have special needs.
All right.
And different needs in terms of, you know, it's hard for them to put up zippers and buttons and all the sleeves. And so to be able to just throw on a fun T-shirt and be proud of the body that you have, even if you're riding around a wheelchair, that's important too.
One last question. I mean, it seems like you do everything. Do you sing or play a musical instrument?
No.
You're limited.
We can do karaoke if you want. I'm so limited. I'm so, so limited. But I'm not afraid to suck at those things either. You know, if you want to go golfing, I'm not going to. Oh, I don't know what that is. Whoop.
Someone that wants to go golfing.
No, that's someone who wants to go golfing. I think it's totally okay to not be good at a lot of things not be great at a lot of things.
Do you still try new things?
All the time. All the time. I am now, I think I've done so many things that have made me scared, nervous, and uncomfortable and not died, that I'm not afraid to do it. And people say, you know, like, how do you speak behind the microphone? And how do you go talk in front of a bunch of people? I feel like if I did that, I would die. And with me, I'm like, I feel like if I didn't do that, I would die. I feel like I have a message that is burning out of my chest that if I don't get up on that stage and if that person isn't there to hear the message, that I'm going to die.
Mm.
So I hope that with the different speaking programs that I have, with the different courses that I have, and even with all the clients who I work with, that where we start, you might be afraid to try something new, but where we end, I want the only thing for you to be afraid of is, are you doing enough? And how big are we going to get? Can you handle how big we're about to get?
Wow. Boy, I'm motivated. I'm
good.
Go,
let's do it. Come on.
Go do something now. This. Thanks for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
This edition of Synapse Think Tank of the Air, Giselle Ugarte. You can find her, well, lots of places, but Media Bridge Advertising is one of her main anchors right
now. Sure is.
And look for her clothing line and motivational speaking, et cetera. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
I also want to thank Dan Culhane, our producer for the program, and to mention that this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. This is Steve LeBeau signing off for this week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.